Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Welcome to Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Like it could be our Thursday show for a while, and I hope the hosts or the viewers are happy to listen to Mark since he's a founder of the show.
I'm happy to be here.
I always like it when Mark's on the show. I must say, I've been missing him for a while now.
Yeah, and I've never been on with specifically you two. It's crazy how many combinations there are that I'm still
right. With what, 10, 12 hosts,
yeah,
or whatever, the combinations speak quite large.
Yep. So the first thing that I brought in to talk about tonight is a Wall Street Journal article titled, "Why Doesn't Gen Z Want to Be All It Can Be?" And you may think that this is about Gen Z people not wanting to work or something, but it's actually a quite boomery pro-war opinion piece from Wall Street Journal.
Ah, so it's why don't they want to sign up and catch bullets?
Right.
Well,
I see.
Can we define Gen Z real quick?
I want to say it's 1996 to, I think, 2010.
So, yeah, that's what I got. I just looked it up on Wikipedia.
Oh, really?
Mid-90s to early 2010s.
Because a lot of people say 1995, but I was born in 1986, and I feel like I can't completely relate to millennial or Gen Z completely, but I feel more like Gen Z than millennial.
So basically a 24-year-old to like down to like a 12 or 13-year-old would be a Gen Zer?
Well, I'm 27, and I was born in 96.
Okay, so a 26-year-old, so from like a 13-year-old to a 26-year-old would be a right now, if you're listening to this live, is, you know, that would be a Gen Zer right now.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So that means that Bonnie might be Gen Z. She's a cusper,
yeah,
as it were. But my son Jack is definitely a Gen Z. Bonnie's quite a bit older than he is. But he was taller than her at 12.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
I'm sure.
He's a tall kid anyways.
He is.
Since I'm short, I get to be in Gen Z instead of millennial since I'm a cusper. But I just thought that title was so funny that it's so incredibly skewed towards being pro-war that you wouldn't even know what it's talking about. Why doesn't Gen Z want to be all it can be? And then the subtitle says, "Young Americans are skeptical of the military. That's a reason to worry about national security." It says, "Optimism was in the air at the 2023 Reagan National Defense Forum, where the annual survey of American opinion showed growing public support for defending Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion," which isn't good or optimistic to me. That sounds scary. I don't want to go to war against China.
I would not particularly like to do the same. I think that there's some things that the U.S. could do about that now that they choose not to do because they'd rather have the conflict than, say, some immigration. I mean, so if you want to pick one country, Taiwan's in the top, you know, top several in the world that I'd say, you know what, let's have unrestricted migration from Taiwan. You know, if the Taiwanese government needs a little land, you know, saw them off a piece that the federal government has in Nevada and let them, you know, move everybody there and rule over there. Whatever the case may be, there's no reason that American blood and billions of dollars needs to be shed over some rock in the Pacific. You know, if it's the people, fine. But some chunk of land where the losing military of a the losing government of a war 60, 70, 80 years ago, I don't even know, that doesn't make any sense. You know, there's a solution to this that isn't our kids dying.
And, you know, Taiwan, from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but, like, that's a super productive country. They produce a tremendous amount of stuff. So the culture of the Taiwanese people probably have excellent work ethic, from what I can tell, and are motivated and skilled. And we are really lacking motivation and skill right now in America.
Big time. It's kind of like Israel. It's like, why don't all countries just say, we'll take a certain amount, and we'll take a certain amount? They wouldn't do that in, I don't know, the 30s after World War II or the 40s, whenever they had the Balfour Agreement and they just stole a piece of land and gave it to the Israeli people instead of...
Yeah, the Jews. Yep.
Yeah, instead of just, like, letting them move wherever they wanted to in the world. That's kind of messed up.
Right, and, you know, leaving the Israel conversation out, because I think it gets very, very complicated here, but I just want everyone to think about what it would have been like if the United States... Now, Israel is one of the most productive and prosperous countries in the world. While people are shooting missiles at them for the last six decades.
Well, they also get like $14 billion a year in financial aid from the United
States.
It's
mostly just military stuff. So
they're also shooting their
own rockets,
too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not claiming they're the good guys in all of this. I'm just saying that they've managed to be very successful.
Yep.
If the United States... because, you know, it's worth pointing out that FDR, Roosevelt, was a terrible racist. I mean, he just hated Jews. And he turned away the ship of the damned. You can look it up.
Yeah.
These people, nearly every one of them ended up dying in a concentration camp. He could have just said, open the doors, flung the doors open, and said, Jews of the world, come to the United States. They ended up, many of them ended up here anyway, and we benefit as a result. As a group of people, these people have won more Nobel Prizes than any other group. And the United States would be better off had those people moved here rather than to Israel. And there wouldn't be this particular manufactured conflict that's going on. But this is what happens when you just, you know, you get involved. People should be able to move from one place to another. And that's why I say we're making the same mistake with Taiwan right now. The United States would be better off if it let for whatever amount of Taiwanese people they could bring over here. And if you've got to make compromises to do it, make the compromises. It's better than losing your kid in some stupid war over a rock in the Pacific.
And it's funny because I don't know this for a fact or anything, but I think the same way as Jay was describing about the Taiwanese people, because I see Made in Taiwan on so many things. I just think they're really productive, and I don't see any reason why it would be anything but a gain or a plus for us to bring them, some of them here who want to be here. I think the thing is, so many people are too attached to the specific rock that they live on, and I just
I don't
can't understand.
I don't think the Taiwanese are too big on that. I mean, they've only been there for a little while.
Oh.
Basically, around World War II, that government was driven there. It was authoritarian for a long time. Now it's gone democratic and they're very popular. I'd like to talk real quick about the Silicon Shield. Have you guys heard about this?
I have not.
The Silicon Shield.
No.
This is really, really important. So Taiwan, back in the 90s, decided, you know what? we're going to do something that's going to make it so we never get invaded. And they became the largest manufacturer. They're the only manufacturer, basically. I think you can do some in the United States, but more or less the biggest manufacturer of silicon microchips, computer chips. The good ones. Now, you can get some Chinese microchips that go in, like, cars so that, you know, they can get blown up in EMPs and all that kind of thing. But the kind of microchips that go into a computer, one that your laptop or whatever,
those are all racing drone. Right. My brother, he talks about this. You know, he's really into racing drones, and he's like, Taiwanese, they make the best chips. They hold up. You can smash these things at like 60 miles an hour into a tree, and he's like, the computer's still good. It still works.
Wow.
And not only does the United States if Taiwan got invaded, they'd blow up these factories. And then the world would suffer as a result, including China. So they're trying to make it so that it's just impossible for them to be invaded. We'll see whether or not China's willing to, you know, put the world back a decade as far as microprocessors go, just to get a rock in the Pacific. But they might just be.
Yep.
I wonder with the Taiwanese. So one of the problems we have here in like the States is. And speaking like with Gen Z, for example, versus like boomers. So like my father-in-law, he's 74 years old. And
sounds like a boomer.
Yep. So he was a mechanical engineer. He worked in, you know, the Portsmouth nuclear power plant. He worked in when my wife was like 5 years old, the whole family lived in Italy for like 6 months because he was tooling up a nuclear power plant in Italy.
Wow.
So this is a guy that's got like just he's got the kind of experience that you can't buy. He's got the kind of skills that you can't buy because he did this job for like 35 years and he really enjoyed it. You know, he grew up a farm kid in Vermont, so he earned his dopamine hits by accomplishing a job and a task well done. And then basically when I married his daughter, we bought this, you know, house that needed a ton of work, and he was 69 years old, 68 years old, and he showed up 3 days a week.
Wow.
And he worked with me, you know, 7-8 hours a day. And, you know, he didn't climb ladders or really or anything. He didn't want to do that. But I was doing the grunt work, you know.
It's understandable for a 69-year-old.
But, like, I would give him a measurement of a board. And, like, you know, Mark kind of understands the construction of my house a little bit. He's seen it. And
it's a geodesic dome, right?
Yeah, a geodesic dome. And so we had to replace, like, I replaced, like, 200 2x6s. You know, I had to redo the entire roof. We put an eave on the roof, on it, so that the rain didn't hit the walls going down. Anyways, but he'd, like, just had an answer for everything. Like, I would still be, like a drooling idiot trying to work on his house basically without him. Like, he was so valuable. So, like, all these farmers I deal with, guys that are making hay right now, they're all in their 70s. All the guys that are like raising livestock and cattle, they're all in their 70s. I have another friend, Bob Anderson. He's Ernie Hancock's buddy. So if you guys who are listening to the show probably know who Bob Anderson is, and he worked for Power Verde, which is a nuclear power plant there just west of Phoenix. And, like, they're trying to call him back to work, from what I understand, because they just don't have any young men or young people, like, looking to, like, take on, you know, these jobs. We're going to be in trouble, just the fact that, like, the staff, there isn't, like, people just aren't interested in doing, like, working in a nuclear power plant, for example. Just not many of them like there was 50 years ago. And same thing with farming.
I don't want to I agree with you, and I have the same concerns that you do, but I also have a concern that manufacturers and plants these days aren't willing to invest in people coming in. They're not willing to take a kid at 16 or 18 or 21 and begin training him to be the engineer that your father-in-law is.
Right.
They want him to come completely, you know, packaged up and ready to go so that they can teach him a little bit so that he's ready. You know, what they don't want to do is they don't want to go in and do that babysitting service that so long ago they were willing to do. Now, I'm not saying kids today are the same as kids were in 1960. Far from it. But I am saying that if they want people who are loyal to America, because Right now, if you want to hire STEM, you're going to hire somebody who would not traditionally have looked like an American.
Right. Now, what I was getting to with these folks from Taiwan, like, for example, you know, are there 30-year-olds in Taiwan that, you know, have these skills that, like, America's 70-year-olds have, for example? And, you know, and the thing is, too, is, like, so my father-in-law's generation, and even, like, my generation, sort of, but, like, my father-in-law's generation, you know, they knew how to drive a car at 13 years old. They knew how to adjust the points. They knew how to change spark plugs. They knew how to change a tire at 13 years old. His grandfather, you know, at 9 years old, knew how to lube the axles on the horse-drawn wagon, knew how to fit the harness on, you know, on the horse, knew how to put a shoe correctly on a horse. You know, my wife has no idea how to use a clutch. Right.
Yeah.
And she just and like, you know what they consider a manual transmission is a millennial anti-theft device.
Matt taught me how to use one last year. But I kind of think I need more practice. But I also learned how to jump a car 2 days ago or yesterday. And that was pretty easy. That was really easy. But I've just never done it before. I know how to get a boyfriend, so.
Right. Well, I kind of think that that's one of the things about your wife. Your wife can do a lot of things, Jay.
Oh, yes,
The fact that she can't, lube an axle on a horse-drawn carriage might be, might be something she's leaving for her husband.
Well, that might be a bad example. But, like, what I was saying, so, like, today, nowadays, like, I know so many young men in their 20s that have no interest in driving a car. You know, they don't want a car. They don't have a car.
That's so weird.
Especially like the ones that all grew up in the cities. And like, there's a handful of these guys from California who moved here for the Free State Project that like they never drove a car until they got to New Hampshire. And they're terrified of these cars. You know, the kid in the 60s, you know, when my father-in-law was, you know, like a teenage boy, he was just, if he could get on anything that had a tractor, a car, whatever, I mean, he was just really, really eager to do that. The young men today, they're not eager to, like, you know, get on a tractor or, you know, and most of them aren't. Like, some of the rural kids and the homeschool kids are into it. But, you know, they didn't see, a lot of them aren't getting this example when they're like 3-4 years old. Like my kids, you know, my 3-year-old daughter can totally operate the forklift that I have from my lap.
Wow.
She can totally operate my John Deere 310 backhoe. You know, it's got an automatic, well, she can't totally operate it, but she can do all the hand controls. You know, she can't reach the clutch or the brakes. But like she can steer it like with precision. You know, I let her use a joystick, and we put a round bale spike on the front bucket, and she can totally like pick up the round bales with really good precision. Mm-hmm. In my homeschool co-op, there's Warner, who's 6 now, but Warner this summer at 5 years old is actually Jeremy Kaufman's son. He's sitting on my lap in the backhoe, and he's operating the joystick. He's shifting it forward and reverse, just like my daughter. But those kids are like really thirsty and into that stuff when they're that age.
Because they're homeschooled, the Kaufman kids.
But when they're thirsty for that kind of stuff, and then the parents just pacify them with an internet device, for example, which has kind of happened with all these Gen Zers had, you know, high speed internet available to them, and it became a pacifier and a babysitter, you know, for those kids. They never got wired into their brain like, hey, I want to drive the tractor, for example.
Right. I think that you say it all the time, and I think you're exactly right. It's the dopamine hits. Is that, you know, if you've got an iPad and you're playing Fruit Ninja, everything else sucks.
Yes.
It just sucks. And it's true. You know, I'm like, my son can do the things that you say, that you talk about. He's been through your man camp and thank you for that.
Oh, nice.
But I had to drag him in many cases through all of this. You know, I mean, he started driving with me, same as your kid, you know, at like 6 years old. And he would sit in my lap and we'd drive up the driveway, and it was a longer driveway. So he got a little bit of driving time and we'd switch over. I think this generation's smart in a way. It's a hell of a lot nicer just to sit in the back seat and let mom take you wherever you want to go.
Wait, so your son who's like 15, like even now he doesn't want to drive?
He doesn't particularly want to drive.
Hmm.
He does, but he doesn't want to. Mm-hmm. You know, like, why would he want to drive himself to school or to, you know, the Dungeons and Dragons meetup or whatever it is?
Well, that's making me feel more millennial, I guess, because I feel like everyone my age, including myself, really wanted to drive ourselves to school and just...
There were a lot of kids...
Look, I have keys.
In your group, there were a lot of kids that wanted to ride single gear bicycles. You know, the hipster, the phenomenon that went on
the BMX bike.
Yeah, you know, and they'd wear flannels and have a beard and a little beanie toque, and you know they didn't want cars, but. I think that it's gotten worse.
And a cultural difference is, like, with, you know, Bonnie, for example, you didn't grow up in, like, an urban area, did you? Or a
I
city?
Grew up in it. I no. kind of had in both. I grew up in a huge suburb of San Antonio with a huge class. And then the last year of high school moved to the middle of absolute nowhere. So, like, when I'm thinking of, like, my bigger class in close to San Antonio, I don't think of them as not wanting to drive, but they're more, like, skateboarding and stuff like that too, but I still think they also wanted to drive.
So was there a bit of a car culture? Because so with more like suburban people have to drive cars, for example,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people who are, you know, versus city people who are riding the subway or getting in a taxi or whatever, or just walking to work, the kids don't really see their parents like driving the cars if they're growing up in the cities.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't know about that. Because even San Antonio, like, you have to drive a car. It's just not that type of a city.
Right.
So
you grew up watching your parents, for example, drive cars.
Yeah.
If you were, like, in L.A., for example, that was probably, like, less happening with, you know, and the idea of driving a car in L.A., from what I understand, I've never been there, is utterly miserable.
Like a
well, it's miserable, but almost everybody does it.
Okay. Well, in like New York City, my only friend who's about my age who doesn't have a driver's license and never has is from New York City. So,
yeah, so
I know they don't really drive there.
New York City's difficult for cars.
Our host, Aria, is a millennial, and she doesn't like driving in big cities. Now, she'll drive, but she's not a fan of...
Yeah, but she's from Mississippi, so I could see that. Because, like, I had to get used really fast when I moved back to San Antonio to driving in a crazy amount of cars moving around and, like, big highways and stuff like that. And I'm, like, part millennial, I guess, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think kids even younger than me are the only ones that just don't want to drive when they have the opportunity. Because, like, when I was in high school, anybody who had a car was cool because, like, you could be picked up to go hang out with your other friends and not be, like, stuck at your house. I think people were less... stuck to the internet back then, even though Facebook was around. Like, I don't know, when I was in high school in like 2013 through 15. 603-283-6160. You can get in on the conversation with us if you call that number. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
As the cold and flu season approaches, Silver Lungs is ready to help you and your family through the toughest of the year by supporting your immune system and overall health. From our best-selling colloidal silver generating system to our entire line of silver-based skin gels, nasal sprays, soaps, and silver solutions, Silver Solutions remain one of nature's most powerful and least expensive antibacterial agents. Now you can produce your own for pennies a day in the comfort of your home using the breakthrough technology of the Silver Lungs Generator. Learn more today at www.silverlungs.com.
USA News Update. Israel is revealing what it describes as an extensive tunnel network beneath Gaza City constructed by Hamas. According to Israeli officials, the network includes command and control centers, meeting rooms, and hideouts for top Hamas leaders. Biden administration officials are heading to visit Mexico in light of the surge in migrants at the southern border.
Additional enforcement actions are urgently needed so that key ports of entry can be reopened across our shared border.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said the Secretary of State and Secretary of Homeland Security will meet with Mexico's president. A mass shooting occurred at Charles University in Prague, claiming the lives of at least 15 people and leaving about two dozen others injured. The university is situated near the popular Charles Bridge, a notable tourist destination. Officials have confirmed that the gunman responsible for the attack was also killed. John Schaefer, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Chihibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau d'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
You control 603-283-6160. And I want to tell you that this hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash, digital cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. In addition to being one of the world's first cryptocurrencies, Dash was the first crypto project to have a decentralized autonomous organization, or DAO, that to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. Every month, 10% of the mining rewards go into a treasury. Anyone with one Dash to spend can put forward a proposal to the Dash masternodes. The masternodes vet the proposals and decide which ones move forward and are funded by the treasury. Nowadays, DAOs are plentiful, but Dash paved the way by doing it first nearly a decade ago. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at dash.org. And thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit dash.org to learn more about Dash. Dash.org. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Jay Noon.
And it's me, Mark Edge, remotely.
And Libertariat here in the chat server on Element that we have has told me the article that we're discussing is called Why Doesn't Gen Z Want to Be All It Can Be? Because the Army's recruiting slogan used to be all that you can be.
Be all that you can be.
That was
in the Army.
Oh, wow.
Or something to that effect. I'm sorry, I'm not a great singer, but that's the general notion.
I hadn't heard of that before, so I thought they just made it up and they were that for a war, I guess.
Well, the first thing that it was associated with this other marketing line is we do more by 6 a.m. or 8 a.m., I'm not exactly sure, 9 a.m. than most people do all day. And, you know, that's how you get to be all that you can be in the Army.
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, and you also have to support killing people just because your government tells you to.
Not in the 80s. I mean, like in the 80s, all they did was invade Grenada.
I thought that they had, I don't know, have some stuff that killed
people. I think
people?
In like 88 or something, there was the first Persian Gulf conflict or something, but it wasn't much of a war, I guess.
I definitely judge people a lot less for joining the Army in the 80s and even the mid-90s, or judge them less for joining the military back then than now. Nowadays, after 9/11, it's just so obvious how bad it is, and it's just so easy to get on the internet and learn things that I kind of judge you.
Well, I mean, they get people to sign up at 17, and they promise them the world, and in many cases, they don't deliver. And they certainly don't tell you that you're going to have limbs that are going to get blown off for, you know, nothing. And they don't talk about how the, you know, what you lose in a war isn't worth the loss. Mm-hmm. That whatever it is, you can just go back war after war after war, and you can say, you know, this death, it didn't mean anything. It wasn't, it didn't move the needle forward. You know, I'm sure there's some amazing guys that moved the needle forward and that their death was meaningful in a war, but the vast majority of them, it just doesn't make a big difference. And one of the problems they're saying here in this article, if it's the same one that I read, is that Gen Z wants to get paid. And, you know, if they're asking for my life, they're asking me to put my life on the line, and we're talking about, you know, some paycheck a little bigger than McDonald's, I'd rather be a fry cook than a bullet catcher.
Yeah.
And Gen Z is pretty soft. like, I was having a conversation with a 13-year-old young man the other day, and he's a little soft, and I'm like, how many push-ups can you do? And he just looks at me. Like, you know, he didn't want to answer me. I'm like, so, you know, you should be able to do, like, you know, at least 10, I would think. He's like, no, I can't do a push-up.
Well.
And I'm like, really? And I'm like, you got to start doing some push-ups, man. You know, something.
Oh, I couldn't do push-ups. I don't even know if I could do a push-up right now because Ian and I kind of lagged working out, like, 2 weeks before he got sent to jail. And now all of a sudden it's been, like, 3 months or something. 2 months since he went to jail, and I haven't worked out the whole time. But I had to start off doing wall push-ups because I just thought it was stupid to work out or something. I don't know if that's a Gen Z thing. I thought it was stupid to work out, and then
it isn't all Gen Z. It isn't all generation. Like I said, you know, before, it's like cultural.
Hmm.
So like the kids that grew up around, you know, farming. You know, the kid that went to grandpa's farm or was raised on a farm, for example, or was in the woods. You know, had some forest land. You know, right next to where they live. They were doing firewood, for example, because they were heating with firewood. Those kids were always chopping trees down. They were stacking wood, stacking hay. And, like, you know, but definitely when I was, like, 13 years old, I could do, like, 60 push-ups, no problem. You know, when I was 17 years old, I could squat 300 pounds in high school. But, you know, I was, you know, and me and all my buddies that were, like, you know, working, doing the farm stuff, cleaning stalls, pushing wheelbarrows, like, with a couple hundred pounds of, you know, manure. You know, when I was a teenager, we had, like, 27 stalls at the farm. And they all had to be cleaned every single day. And so, you know, we were always recruiting other teenage kids to help. And those kids that were doing that work, you know, they got strong and they were pretty solid.
Well, that definitely wasn't me. And yeah, that it does have a lot more to do with culture than like just generation. And in fact, generation itself, it doesn't mean a lot to most people because like there's nothing that you can say about every single person from any certain generation. But
yeah. But I mean, I do feel some, when somebody talks to me, like, you know, somebody talks to me about, hey, I had to go change the channel for my dad while he was watching TV, versus, you know, a kid that grew up playing Fruit Ninja. I think there's, you know, there's something there. You know that there's this sort of difference. And I'm not willing to say that there's not many generations alive that are hard as leather left. You know, the ones that were are getting a little older. And, you know, I mean, Gen X, you know, we're latchkey kids. I mean, we could handle ourselves, but a lot of them didn't work that hard. I mean, Jay knows far more about engines, for instance, than I do. And I think that's just where he's from and, you know, what he learned. And he's got to be 10 years younger than me.
And I would say joining the military is something that keeps you from learning, like, actually important skills. Like, we were talking about this a couple weeks ago. Everything is very, maybe it was a show with me and you and Joa. From a couple weeks ago, but we were talking about how the military kind of, like, you don't learn everything about something. You don't go and become an actual engineer. Wait, what am I trying to say? Not engineer, like, somebody works on, like, electrician. You just learn, like, your one little electrician skill or a couple of skills.
Right.
And then they have the next person.
Compartmentalized.
That's the word.
Each guy has his own specific skill or trade that he does, And that's, you know, a very much, you know, a team mentality, and it fails if, you know, a few of the guys are missing or many of the guys are missing. It's kind of like the slaughterhouses when they started, you know, doing the COVID testing and when the undocumented folks who work at these big corporate, you know, mega slaughterhouses that are doing like 10,000 hogs a day, when 10% of the workforce doesn't show up, it goes down to like 20% capacity. Because, you know, all these guys have these specialized things that they do in that slaughterhouse, and the other guys don't know how to, like, take up that slack and do that. But also when it comes to, like, farming, for example, farmers and loggers, fishermen, also, these guys have to do, like, everything. They got to, like, fix the engine. They got to, like, you know, doctor the cow. They got to, you know, go out there and, you know, work the land and plant the seeds and, you know, whatever. You know, they got to do, like, everything. They got to fix the roof because they generally can't afford to hire someone to fix the roof. You know, they got to maybe do some plumbing and some electrical work because they just got to get it done right now. And so that's kind of how I grew up, you know, just learning how to do all these things, you know, right there with my dad, for example. So
that's definitely something that I feel like people who have any sort of just a regular job nowadays, they can't just learn to do everything because they've got to do their job and then they pay other people to do other stuff. So I don't know if it's necessarily bad. Like, I can't say it's bad. Like, I'm not a jack of all trades, you know, but I just think that's how society has caused us to be now.
Yeah, kind of like insects.
Insect?
Kind of like insects, compartmentalized. Each insect
compartmentalized, yeah.
Yeah, it has its own little job.
I always thought it was kind of weird. That's like the Utah motto is worker bee.
that is scary.
It's weird.
You know, what I'm concerned with is that America isn't producing certain types of laborers, and, you know, what's going to happen? I don't know. I don't have any answers for you as to how it's going to happen.
Should just open the borders.
That's why I'd like to import some of these Taiwanese folks. It sounds like, you know, those guys are there and they're young.
Well, I like the Taiwanese thing. I'd say about border opening is that you've got to be prepared whenever you make a political. You know, they're doing this right now in Washington. They're trying to figure things out. And nobody's going to go for the libertarian solution to everything. And there's some good reasons not to. I would say the good reason not to make a libertarian choice is because we don't live in a libertarian world. And if you just open up the border and say, hey, come on, everybody in here, vote and take all the welfare there is.
Yeah.
And you've really got to say things like, hey, you come across this border, you're not getting a penny of U.S. taxpayer money. You come across that border and you'll never be able to vote in a U.S. election. You can send an absentee ballot back home, and I'm fine with that, but you're not voting here. And that, you know, I think that those are some reasonable solutions that a worker coming from Honduras, for instance, would be like, I can never vote and I will, you know, never get a penny from the United States government. No problem. I'm coming. And you'd find that the people who want to come at that point aren't the layabouts that are just going to, you know, take a government check or get a little card that gets loaded with money. They're gonna work.
Yeah, when I worked in Colorado from like 2013 to 2016, I worked with a whole bunch of these guys that were probably some of the best people I got to know. In fact, they were far better. They had better morals, better work ethic, you know, than like most of the white guys I was working with. You know, the Mexican fellas. You know, they would show me pictures of their grandma. They would show me pictures of their kids. How proud they, you know, like the one guy, Julio, his son, 7 years old, and he's running the skid loader, stacking hay on a semi truck, the 4x4x8 foot bales, and like the kid could do it like just as good as any adult could.
Wow.
And they were very proud of that stuff, to where the third and fourth generation Mexican guys and even the white guys, they were like, oh man, I'm gonna spend my tax return on a, you know, set of rims for my, you know, Pinto or whatever, and you know, I'm gonna, you know, look at this hoe I slayed, you know, from Tinder, you know, kind of things. And like, but the Mexican guys that were undocumented, that were there to work hard, you know, I often say it's the kind of guy I'd want my daughter to marry, because they just got good cultural ethics and morals, and their priority was their family. It wasn't like consumerism and, you know, nonsense.
Yeah, I say that most of the illegal immigrants that I've met from, I think I've only ever met any from Mexico. Like, a lot of people like to say there's all these South Americans coming over the border, but I lived in San Antonio, Texas, and was out of my house every single day, way more than I am here, and I only ever met Mexican illegal immigrants, and all of them are, like, about family, and they were about working really hard and stuff like that, and I never met anybody who was just a layabout. And the other thing is, I wasn't so libertarian, and I looked into how to get my Mexican illegal immigrant ex welfare at one point, and at least it wasn't very obvious. I couldn't figure out any way to get somebody without a social security card welfare, because he was just working so hard doing like stupid jobs, and it's just like, I don't know, during COVID everything went really crazy and he had to like get fired from a job, but it doesn't matter. I just think that people really think that there are all these people coming from Mexico just to sit around in an ugly city instead of their, you know, place they're from that's way more beautiful with organic food and their grandma that they care about. And they just want to sit on a couch here in an ugly city in the United States. And I just don't really think that's the case. Like, maybe
I think they're coming, and at least in Honduras, what they complain of is that there's a lot of Hondurans leaving, and that the best of their labor force is going to the United States. Now, that's a good sign, right? Like, the United States is getting the best of the Honduran labor force, and that would be something that I would be looking forward to. But I think the easiest way to get welfare is, from what I've heard, is to have a kid, right? And then the kid gets the welfare. And the kid's an American citizen, getting the welfare, and, you know, that sort of thing. And I think that's wrong, too. I don't think American taxpayers should have to pay just because somebody had a kid on terrestrial soil. I think that's outrageous, to be honest. But at that point, they're just taking the money that they're earning, and they're going to send more back to, you know, Abuela in Honduras, which is... it's a reasonable thing to do. I mean, there's nothing wrong. If you're putting out a bowl of cat food every morning and then you're getting upset that stray cats are coming by and eating your cat food, you're insane, and it's not the cat's fault.
Yeah, as long as we have welfare here, we're going to have people overdosing from drugs and that are on welfare because all the people are overdosing. All the first responders I've asked, I said, hey, out of all the people that you're Narcanning or dead bodies you're picking up, are they all on welfare? And 100% of the time now, the answer is yes. They all have an EBT card, every one of them. And what we end up finding is, one guy said, we don't find an EBT card right away, but once we put all the information into the, you know, they're doing a death certificate kind of thing, then they find out that they were receiving benefits from Health and Human Services. So basically, right here in America, we can't have an open border right now with the welfare program. I mean, the welfare is a problem. So if we got rid of all the welfare, you're not going to have drug addicts overdosing, you know, after, you know, this round that's out there kills themselves. And you're not going to have people coming into this country specifically for the welfare programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, welfare is the problem ultimately. And if we just got rid of welfare, that'd fix so many problems. It would be ridiculous. After probably a time of, like, unrest or whatever, like, chaos, and then it would be better.
Well, what would happen is all these people who are essentially useless right now that are collecting welfare, you know, just getting high because, you know, that's what they choose to do, and they're incentivized to do it through the welfare program.
Mm-hmm.
They will either die, or they will be like, wow, I need to actually take care of myself, and I'm hungry now. And, you know, and I believe, yeah, if you cut welfare out here in New Hampshire, like, because everybody can carry a gun in New Hampshire, and the cities, you know, aren't, like, crazy, and there's not, and there's, like, very, pretty much no violence in New Hampshire compared to anywhere else in the country, what would happen is if these guys got a little stupid and started doing some stuff like, you know, breaking and entering or trying to rob the liquor store, they're just going to get shot, and this problem's going to take care of itself real quick. But New York City, where law-abiding citizens can't even defend themselves,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think there would be some serious mayhem. It would be like, you know, one of these zombie movies where they're just all going crazy, all the tweakers, because they couldn't get the money.
I hate seeing those videos of people just running into stores and stealing stuff. I have no clue where that kind of thing is happening, but
places you can't own guns. LA, right. You know, San Francisco, New York City, Chicago, right. Baltimore.
Did you see the Sikh guy that got in trouble for hitting somebody with a broomstick? I mean, it's not even a... I mean, it's a broomstick. The thin kind.
Was
I mean, if
like
you could really hit him,
gas station
it broke.
Owner? That
yeah, it was something like that.
It was in California.
I saw that video, but I didn't know he got in trouble.
Yeah, they were charging him for, like, I don't know, assault and battery or something, and he was defending the store.
The guy was going around destroying everything, though, or at least stealing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I saw it a while ago.
Holding an awful person.
Yeah.
It used to be you could hit a guy with a stick if he stole your stuff.
Yeah.
But not in America now.
Well, some places in America, there's like you have stand your ground. So this isn't legal advice, but definitely some places, if somebody walked into your store and started acting threatening and crazy, and you felt you were in harm, and you pulled out your gun and you put a bullet in them, the police are going to come, and the coroner's going to come mop up the mess. They're going to say, thank you, sir. We're sorry for your problems, and you go walk away. To where, like, New York City, the guy comes in there, or California, the guy comes in there, trashes the place, pulls out a gun, and you shoot him, you're going away.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, it seems like there's not much one can do in certain places. I don't know what it's like in California, but I can say I visited a couple of years ago. It was pre-COVID, so a few years ago. And my uncle lives out there, and we're like, well, let's go to San Francisco, because what do tourists do? And he's like, he and his family are like, are you kidding?
Mm-mm.
No way. We don't want to go to San Francisco. Why don't we go to the aquarium in Monterey? And, you know, it was very nice. We got to see some dolphins and some otters and some seals and stuff. And that was, you know, great. But apparently Californians don't want to take visitors to San Francisco anymore. And that used to be the place to go.
Wow. That's crazy. Well, I don't know. How we got onto that topic at all, but we were talking about how anti-war is Gen Z. And I want to get into the numbers here. At an event I had never heard of before called the 2023 Reagan National Defense Forum, they apparently show people the results of this survey of American opinion, and it showed that overall, there is growing public support for defending Taiwan in the event of a Chinese invasion. The survey also revealed, though, high levels of support for continued assistance to Ukraine and Israel. It found that most Americans are confident in the armed forces, support increases to the defense budget, and view the U.S. military as superior to China's. As Roger Sakim, director of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Institute, put it, our survey shows that Americans remain resolved, like President Reagan was, to support those defending freedom around the world. Yet the survey's results also forecast dark clouds on the horizon, according to this person who wrote this, because they love the military and war. Vast and expanding gaps between how the youngest and oldest Americans think about international affairs point to contentious times ahead. Consider Taiwan. More than 75% of those over 65 years old say they would support economic sanctions, relocating American military assets, and sending military equipment if the Chinese invade. Less
right.
than...
War is old men talking and young men dying.
Hmm. And it's crazy. Like, that's not a new
Nope. It's not even a new saying.
Yeah, but it's way worse now. So over 75% of those over 65 just support that stuff, but less than 50% of those under 30 favor these same responses.
Well, and also, you know, so the younger generation has, you know, been easily able to see what the real effects of war are due to the communication we have that we didn't have 30, 40 years ago. The fact that, you know, you get in, for example, with the Ukraine thing, there's all these videos that came out of Ukraine because every soldier, every civilian is a journalist now, mm-hmm. essentially. They all have a camera on their phone, and everybody's got a phone. So, you know, this is, you know, not like in, you know, Vietnam where there was, or Korea War, there was very little instant media that came out, and everything was super, super censored.
Yeah.
You know, whatever came out of those, because it had to go through these channels, and the only way you got to see it was on, like, NBC or ABC or something. And today, it's just, you know, it's an Instagram reel or whatever.
That's so true. The government was able to control what people believed was going on in Vietnam so much more. Like, we read about Henry, was that his name? Kissinger? Henry Kissinger?
Yep.
Apparently, he was very influential in making people believe that, oh, this is what's going on in Vietnam, whether it was true or not, just to get, I think it was Lyndon B. Johnson elected, whoever it was that he was working with. No, it was Nixon. He wanted to get Nixon elected. So more people died because they supported the war because of what Kissinger said. And nowadays, it'd be a lot harder to do that type of a thing because people have access to phones in their pockets and the internet. So,
and people are also understanding, too, more than ever, the only reason all these wars are even happening that America is meddling in and starting, and, you know, they're funding their enemy a decade ahead of time, so they have an enemy. And the number one reason for war is to keep the U.S. dollar as world reserve currency. So every country that becomes a terrorist nation, you know, previously said, we're not going to trade in dollars, or we're trying to use gold or something else.
And I just don't think a lot of people my age want to go die over that, over keeping the U.S. dollar on top and having oil. 603-283-6160. You can get in on the conversation with us. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up.
Most folks don't realize this fact. Our country is only 4 missed meals away from chaos, and those meals can vanish fast. In a national emergency, fragile supply chains break down and will wipe grocery store shelves clean in a matter of hours. Before this happens, there's something you should do today. That's stock up on emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply is the company millions of American families trust for their emergency supplies. You should, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each kit contains delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, heirloom seeds, and other survival necessities. Order by 3 p.m. and your items ship the same day, fast. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. Those who know what's coming, prepare before the chaos starts. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only 2 documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.